is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkman from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. Today I'm speaking with Shelly Fossum, a winner of more than $30,000 in her high stakes career with the FFPC. In this episode, we discuss the role Zero RB played in this year's FFPC main event, the rest of season expectations she has for Juju Smith-Schuster, Marlon Mack, and more. Also, to kick things off in this podcast, we'll hear from 2016 FFPC main event co-champion David Hubbard. The winner of the $250,000 grand prize in the contest, along with his co-manager Nelson Sousa, Hubbard breaks down the Jay Ajayi and Kelvin Benjamin trades, plus how the Vikings offense is affected by Teddy Bridgewater's potential return. You can follow Hubbard on Twitter at 208-858-740. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the RotoViz content and tools, and it helps support the podcast channel. Now, without further ado, let's check in with the champ, David Hubbard. Dave, Jared Cook quietly snuck up into the top 12 tight ends in the FFPC right now. How do you see the second half of his NFL season going for FFPC players looking to keep him in their lineups?
I think Cook will continue to be good. Carr trusts him, and he's a big target with Cooper and Crabtree drawing all the attention. He runs free a lot. They put a safety on him or put a linebacker on him, and he's always had speed, so he's a mismatch for that. He fits their offense real nice since they really don't have a running game. And with Crabtree and Cooper on the outside, it's the same old thing. If you got an athletic, speedy tight end, you can beat the, whatever strong safety or linebacker they try to cover him with. So I think he'll continue to get a lot of volume from Carr.
Certainly been a surprise so far and might continue to be a surprise down the stretch. Six teams on bye again this week. How likely is it, and I don't know how many leagues you own Robbie Anderson in, but how likely is it that you'll be starting him against the Bills this Thursday night as he's coming off a 6-catch for 104 yards and a touchdown line against the Falcons?
Owned Robbie Anderson a lot last year. Don't own Robbie Anderson much this year. If I had him, I would probably play him against the Bills. Curse is involved. ASJ is involved. But Robbie Anderson might be kind of hit and miss because I think the offense goes through ASJ. I think that's who they like to get the ball to. But with Robbie Anderson has speed, so I can see him getting deep on some teams and get a few catches going forward.
Little bit of a surprise is, you know, with the NFL trade deadline, we saw this week that a lot of big players got moved, and one of those players was Kelvin Benjamin to the Bills, and Devin Funchess, where he was maybe looking cuttable last week at this time last week, or maybe at this time, you know, Sunday, coming off a below average performance. All of a sudden, he's looking like the number one for Carolina. How good can he be for fantasy owners down the stretch?
The funny thing is, I own a lot of both of those guys, and that's probably the best thing that's happened in the last in a while for me in fantasy, because now I think they're both number ones. I think it's an ideal situation for Benjamin. He goes to a team that has an elite running back and a quarterback that's capable of getting him the ball, probably throws a better ball than Cam does. So I think Benjamin, big arrow up, and Funchess, arrow up also, because now it's going to be him and Olsen if Olsen ever gets back on the field with some McCaffrey. And they have a couple of speed guys. So the only problem with Funchess is Rivera and his thought process on how to run an offense. But I think they both benefit a lot from that trade. I think that helps both of them tremendously.
How does, you know, talking about Carolina, how does Curtis Samuel and Christian McCaffrey, how do they fit into this now? I mean, are these guys all of a sudden looking with their arrow pointing up as well?
I think so. Everybody in that offense, Curtis Samuel, Russell Shepard, could be another guy to keep your eye on. Russell Shepard is a guy that seems to make plays and that they trust. So I would think Russell Shepard and they'll Samuel, I think maybe it might take him a couple of years to adjust to the NFL game. They design a few plays for him a game. I think that'll continue. But actually it might be Russell Shepard might be the reason they traded Benjamin. Funchess the number one. They think Shepard's a capable number two.
Yeah, keep an eye on Russell Shepard for sure. Teddy Bridgewater, if he is the quarterback for the Vikings coming out of their bye this coming week, he'll be back in, or the Vikings will be back in action in Week 10. If he is the starting quarterback for Minnesota, how does that change their offense as far as what fantasy players or what players would see the biggest fantasy bump if Bridgewater is in there over Keenum?
I think it'll be pretty much the same. Bridgewater is a very capable quarterback, depending on he's been out a while, and sometimes it takes guys a little while to get back going to the speed of the NFL. But I think it helps Rudolph. I think it helps Diggs, McKinnon. And that's who I think it helps the most because he's athletic. He can move around. He's similar to Keenan. He's a little more athletic and has a little better arm, I think.
Last question for you, David, before I let you go. Jay Ajayi is no longer a Miami Dolphin. He is playing on the Philadelphia Eagles. I think most owners were pretty much starting him anyway, and I think that's what will continue to happen. But is this a big boost for Ajayi, or do you think he'll remain relatively the same as far as the numbers he was putting up already this season?
I don't think it's a boost for Ajayi at all. Actually, I think it's the worst team he could have went to. If you watch Philadelphia and that coach, I don't know if it's Deuce Staley, I don't know if it's the head coach, but it's death for running backs if you go there. Last year, Ryan Matthews owned a lot of Ryan Matthews. I think it'll be the same thing. Ajayi will play, Smallwood will play, LeGarrette Blount will play. Don't be surprised when Corey Clement plays. That coach just does not want a bell cow running back. I don't even know why they trade for Ajayi. I guess they figure he can help them some and they'll give him a few carries, but that coach is never going to give all the touches to one running back. So that's not their philosophy. And, again, I don't know if that's Deuce Staley or if that's coming from the head coach. But Ajayi is probably in the same situation. It might help Kenyon Drake and Damian Williams more than helps Ajayi.
Yeah, definitely. If you have Ajayi, maybe the take to have is before you put him in your starting lineup, make sure you don't have a better option either at flex or running back before you do it.
Exactly. He was overdrafted this year for sure.
Well, David, I certainly appreciate you taking the time to speak with me again this week. I will let you get back to waivers, my friend. Good luck to you this week and the rest of the season. We'll talk to you again soon, man.
Thanks a lot, Balky. Happy Halloween.
Thanks to David Hubbard for his input this week. Now here's $30,000 high stakes winner Shelley Fossum.
Shelly, thanks so much for joining the RotoViz High Stakes Lowdown this week. When you are not playing fantasy football with the FFPC and high stakes fantasy football in general, what do you do for a living?
I'm a partner in a small CPA firm, and our practice mainly consists of income taxes.
And I would say, much in the way that you have to crunch numbers for that, it helps you with fantasy and crunching the numbers and crunching the stats as far as managing your teams go, right?
Sure. Yep.
I can imagine. Well, you have you had a great year last year. I want to talk about that. But before we get to that, you have a team in the top 40 in the FFPC main event coming into week 9, which is this coming weekend. You hit home runs, really, with Todd Gurley and Leonard Fournette as you took both of those guys early on in your draft. As we are standing in the face of zero RB, the new normal that so many drafters are applying to their high stakes drafts. Do you feel like top 10 to 12 running backs like Todd Gurley, like Leonard Fournette, are they coming at more of a discount in high stakes drafts? Maybe not even this year, but last year as well in events like the FFPC main event.
Well, it seemed to me that this year probably wasn't quite as much zero RB as it was last year. I saw a little bit of a shift from zero RB this year. Not completely zero RB, but I just didn't see quite as many people doing it as much as last year. And so actually, I was looking at that more of, can you get a discount in maybe rounds 2 and 3, but yet still get a strong wide receiver? I know some of my teams, I went more zero RB, even though I don't consider zero RB as far as some people go with it. I might go maybe 3 or 4 wide receivers in the first rounds and then start RB. I never wait till like round 8 or 9, like I know some people have in the past. But Fournette, especially to me, I was looking at him as being as I was walking around the boards in Vegas looking at the boards, I was kind of surprised, and I think it might have been his foot injury. He was sometimes falling to round 3 or 4, and I thought that was a huge bargain to get him as an RB2 that late.
It certainly has played out that way, no question, though, the way that Fournette has just been destroying defenses this season. And I think that it's safe to say, Shelley, that, you know, in your previous drafts, you know, not even the last couple of years, but, you know, even further than that, you're not necessarily taking the zero RB approach just to stockpile receivers. Sometimes you're just looking for, you know, just that value, that discount that you can get. Like, you know, Fournette's a perfect example, even though he's a running back. Just any way to get that value, to gain that advantage in your drafts, I think you're more likely to, or you have seemed to be more likely to do that.
Yeah, I try to go for more balance. And I tend not to go the tight end super early either. I tend not to do very well when I do that for some reason. So I try to target more values in the tight ends in the, say, rounds 8 to 12. I kind of try to pick some tight ends in that area that I really like, that I think can still be a serviceable tight end one without upsetting the top end of my draft. And I know that's somewhat opposite of what a lot of people do.
I think, and from, you know, the people I've talked to on this show and in the High Stakes Fantasy Football over the last couple of years, I've noticed that the teams that sometimes take 2 or 3 tight ends in that 8 to 12 area, those tend to be the tight ends that have a certain degree of upside, but also, you know, a lot of risk that comes to it. But if you get 2 or 3 of them, usually one of them will pan out to be a top 12 guy. So you have to sink, you know, sometimes 2 or 3 picks into doing it, but it usually pans out. And especially in a tight end premium format like the FFPC, it certainly makes sense to do that and load up on running backs and receivers early. Let's talk about your 2016. It was a banner year for you, more than $15,000 with the FFPC alone. When you look back at how you were successful last year, did you have a lot of the same players on several of your teams, or were you building significantly different rosters to achieve all that success that you had?
Well, once again, I try to balance, not totally load up on all the same players, because my theory is if I'm going to repeatedly load up on the same players, I don't know why I need multiple teams. I might as well just hit it with that one team if you're, I'm going to be really successful or really unsuccessful. So as far as teams, when I draft in Vegas, I try to, at least in the top part of the draft, try to diversify a little bit so that my entire success isn't all on one person. When I get down into the middle to later rounds, I probably start targeting the same people there, just because if those people hit, then that's just a bonus. And if those people don't hit, I can drop them and try to replace them on the waiver wire.
Yeah, and it's not premium picks you're sinking into them either. So if you want to load up on, you know, those mid-round guys, yeah, think about like Alvin Kamara and Chris Thompson. I mean, they were mid-round guys this year, and clearly nobody's cutting them, but they didn't sink a whole lot of capital into it either. So if you can pull it off and then they hit, you already have an advantage in your league. And then, you know, talking about winning the national contest too, that's a huge advantage as well. Let's talk about
going last. Yeah, last year, it was a good year, but at the same time, I made the playoffs in 3 out of 4 of my main event teams, and I lost in the first round all 3 of them. Oh. So, in a way, it was kind of a couple of bad breaks there, too. So it could
have been even better, really.
It could have even been better, yes, but, yeah. You know, it's how things roll. So
that is how things roll, for sure. Let's talk about the latest wunderkind, however you pronounce it, in the NFL right now, Deshaun Watson. Seemingly can do no wrong, Shelley. He goes to Seattle playing a very difficult defense and just has not only one of the best years or best days of his career, one of the best days of any quarterback ever, you know, statistically speaking. Is it time to accept that what we're seeing with Houston now is now the norm, what we can expect not only from Houston the rest of the season, but when we go into drafts next year, assuming they have Hopkins and Fuller and Miller and Foreman and Fedorowicz and Watson, are they just an elite offense in the NFL right now with Watson, or are we expecting to see a regression where Houston maybe drops down, maybe not to an average offense, but maybe to an above average one?
Well, it seems to me that, you know, they're doing very well, but at the same time, I can't imagine they're going to continue at the pace they've been on. It seems like maybe the game flow with Seattle was definitely in their favor, where it was just back and forth, and will teams continue to allow them to do that, or are they going to try to keep them off the field? As far as will it go on for good, who knows? I mean, the NFL, probably they'll tank this week against Indianapolis when they should just absolutely destroy them.
Right, yeah. What about Will Fuller specifically for him? Because I keep waiting for this guy to have, you know, a 2 for 35 week, and it seems like every week he catches 4 or 5 passes for right around 100 yards and a touchdown or two. What, I mean, I can't really explain how he's been able to sustain this, you know, for whatever it's been, 5 or 6 weeks, but there's got to be some sort of negative regression coming for him.
Well, I guess if you're playing the odds, I'd probably take the under.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's just, it's crazy. And I have him in several leagues this year, and I keep plugging him in there expecting nothing. You know, like, this will be the week that he lets me down, and he hasn't yet. And I feel like you got to keep playing him until, you know, he finally has 2 or 3 bad weeks, and then you can look elsewhere. Another receiver, Shelly, that's just had his 2017 breakout, his welcome to the NFL moment this past Sunday night for Pittsburgh, Juju Smith-Schuster. This is a guy that's essentially leapfrogged Martavis Bryant on the depth chart. Obviously had Ben Roethlisberger's eye this past week. Has scored touchdowns besides what we saw happen in Week 8. Is he a top 30 receiver for you the rest of the way?
Well, unfortunately, I only have him on one team, on a draft experts team, which is good. I'm not complaining, but I don't have him anywhere else. But it does seem like they're moving on from Martavis, and he looks really good. And I guess the question is, will they, you know, the opposing team start double teaming him and then leave Antonio open? And, you know, how are they going to defend it? It's hard to defend Pittsburgh with their, seems like, unending receiving core that they have. I definitely think he could be a potential league winner if he continues on the path he's going.
What about, I mean, Martavis Bryant did not get traded at the NFL trade deadline. The Steelers have once again said he is a part of the Week 10 game plan. I don't know how significant a part he's going to play in Week 10, given that we've heard this before, and then, Bryant was basically non-existent in it. I mean, he could be cut fairly easily in main event and football guys leagues at this point, I would imagine. I don't really see a path to success when you have Bell, Brown, and Smith-Schuster seemingly all ahead of him in line for targets in Pittsburgh.
Right, and if he continues to, act not in a very professional way, if that's not something they're going to accept, I can see him probably just being put on the bench.
This past weekend, we saw in Indianapolis, Marlon Mack finally outsnap Frank Gore, I believe for the first time this season. When you look at, and the other bit of news that we should talk about, Indianapolis worked out 4 different quarterbacks this week, which to me would suggest that Andrew Luck is we're not talking about a week or two. We might be talking about like another month, or maybe he's not even going to play this season. If that's the case, if Indy is looking towards 2018 right now, it would make sense, I think, to get a good look at Marlon Mack and see what they have in him. So if that's the case, Shelly, do you believe that that's what they will be doing? Will Marlon Mack be getting more touches and sort of be the Colts running back you want to play the rest of the way over Frank Gore? And B, does he make a good, say, top 20, top 25 option the rest of the way for fantasy?
Well, that's a tough one to call, because it seems, like they could go that route, or they could you know, want to protect him as well and just go running back by committee and split it up with him and Gore and get their money's worth out of Gore for his last however many games. I don't really have any share of much of any of Indianapolis's offense. I pretty much avoided them. I think I have T.Y. Hilton on one football guy's team, but with the situation Andrew Luck was in at the beginning of the season, I just stayed clear of anything Indianapolis, which I guess now looks like the right call, but could have also went the opposite way if Andrew Luck would have come back. But I just tried to avoid the whole situation.
Yeah, I didn't really get too many Colts on my teams this year. I screwed up a couple of drafts and ended up having to take Frank Gore as my third running back. But I didn't draft Hilton anywhere. I didn't draft Moncrief anywhere. I didn't draft Doyle anywhere, which is really unfortunate because he's been looking very. He had a monster week this past week for FFPC scoring. Is he? I mean, as you look at this Colts offense, and you and I are and Dave Gerzak too, my co-host on the HSFF Hour, he was trumpeting the stay away from the Colts, stay away from Luck, you know, way back in July or whatever it was, and when we found out he was still not throwing. So as far as that goes, knowing that you don't have a whole lot of Colts shares this year, if you had the opportunity to have Jack Doyle or Cameron Brait, let's say you owned one of them and there's somebody in your league and in like a league where you could trade, and they had the other one and you could make the swap or stand pat, would you rather have Jack Doyle or Cameron Brait, who's actually tallied more than 60 receiving yards in his last five games with Tampa? Who would you rather own for the rest of the 2017 season?
I'd probably say Brait, just because the quarterback situation's a little more stable.
Yeah, and like Brait too, they sink the early pick on O.J. Howard, and we knew that. I would say by and large most tight ends struggle their first year in the NFL. And then you have a guy like Evan Engram, who's totally bucking that trend this year in an offense he really shouldn't be. I mean, you have really no other weapons on that offense, maybe Sterling Shepard at this point, and then that's it. And Evan Engram continues to put up numbers, which it's just crazy to see. But O.J. Howard is a guy that he's had a few games, but it's been Cameron Brait who's been the consistent guy there. And I'd be playing Brait over Howard, obviously, the rest of the way. I think I agree with you. I think I lean towards Brait over Doyle the rest of the way, but it might come down to like a matchup thing every week. And I think, Shelley, there's probably a lot of teams out there that have both Doyle and Brait and are able to play the hot hand.
Right.
The end of the regular season in the FFPC main event and the Football Guys Players Championship is coming up in just 3 weeks. We have 3 weeks left, weeks 9, weeks 10, weeks week 9, 10 and 11, we have to try to get into the playoffs. And not we, but you and anybody else playing those events. What's one piece of advice you can give to rookie owners, players that have never played in those events before? This is their first year as they're coming up onto it. What's one piece of advice that you can give to players, the best thing they can do or one thing they don't want to do as these next 3 weeks decide which four teams from each league will make the league playoffs?
Well, I guess my advice is never give up, no matter how far out of it you might seem, because you can go on a roll and manage to come back. And also you're impacting the other teams of the league. I've been on both sides of that equation, of where I played a team where, you know, they're bottom third of the pack and they don't necessarily set their lineup, and I've won and probably shouldn't have won had they set their lineup. And also I've been on the other end of should have made the playoffs, but someone played a team that didn't set their lineup. So, you know, that's frustrating, that no matter how far out of it you might think you are, you still can impact the league.
I I'm totally with you on that. Like, play out the string, be competitive. I sent out the FFPC email newsletter email this week, and that was one of the things in there. And I always say, don't anger the fantasy gods. You don't want to get them on on the wrong side, or on their, you don't want to be on their bad side for 2018. Maybe 2017 is looking bleak for you, but A, there's still 3 weeks where you can make a run, and B, you're still going to be playing fantasy football next year. Don't and I say this a little tongue in cheek, but don't get them upset with you. The ball, this is a funny game, fantasy football. The ball can bounce a lot of weird ways, and you want to make sure that it is bouncing your way for 2018. With each week, as I alluded to, each week is more and more important, Shelly, as we get closer to not only the league playoffs, but then the championship sprint the last 3 weeks of the season. When you go and set your lineups each week, how much time are you spending weighing those lineup decisions? For you, is it better to really be as analytical as possible, look at every possible angle, or is it something where you historically have just gone with your first instinct when it comes to starting and benching players on a week-by-week basis?
Well, sometimes I think I don't spend enough time just because I don't always have enough time with running a business and having quite a few teams. Sometimes it just turns into, oh my goodness, I've got to hurry up and do waivers, or I've got to hurry up and get lineups set. But what I normally do is I set my lineups on Wednesdays. Before I do waivers, I go through to kind of see where my teams are sitting. Somewhat go with, just by looking at the matchups, who I think are the best matchups, and I pretty much leave it at that. On Thursday, I double check that anybody playing the Thursday game isn't out. And then Friday, I sometimes, do the second round of waivers. I don't always do that, but and then Sunday morning, I'll recheck everything again. I try not to say overanalyze. I somewhat go with my first instincts. This last weekend, I did make a couple last-minute switches because of the weather on the East Coast. A couple of them I made the right call, a couple of them I didn't. That's, once again, how it rolls. So I don't spend probably as much time as I should.
But okay, and that's a fair point. But I'll tell you this. Over the years when I've been playing, I've noticed that I can't really remember a time where I hemmed and hawed over a decision and then ended up making the right one, ended up making the right call a lot of the time. Certainly that happens. But more often than not, when I go with my gut instinct, my first instinct, it seems like I'm making the correct call more than I'm not. And I've said to myself over and over again, when I've overanalyzed, and I went back and looked at the decision I made, I was just like, why didn't I go with my first instinct? Why didn't I go with my gut? Why didn't I just, keep it simple and made the easy call here? And instead I overanalyze. Sometimes I think it's paralysis by analysis, and you end up hemming and hawing over something so much that you end up talking yourself into the wrong call.
Right.
Sometimes
it goes the opposite way too, where, like this weekend on my one main event team that is in the top 40, I had a really tough week because I had like four of my best players on bye. And it was, I have Winston and Taylor for my quarterbacks. And last week I went with Taylor because Winston was hurt. That was the wrong call. This week I went with Winston. No, opposite. I'm sorry. Yes, I went with Taylor last week, and I should have went with Winston. And this week I went with Winston, and I should have went with Taylor. But that's just how it goes.
And what's funny as you bring that up is, in I think at least three of my leagues, I had to make that decision the last 2 weeks. The reason I got Tyrod Taylor was because he was on waivers in a lot of leagues, and I had just been rolling with Winston every single week in those three leagues. But then he had the AC problem. And right. So I knew that I needed to pick somebody up. And I did the same thing as you. I played Tyrod Taylor, and then Winston plays through the injury, throws for 380 yards and three touchdowns, and I'm kicking myself. And okay. I think this week what I did is I played Taylor in two of the leagues and then Winston in one. So, it kind of bit me in the one league. It's so difficult to make the right call because those guys, to me, have been, you look at the matchup and you look at the weapons and everything that was, you know, everything that would go into making a lineup decision, those guys have been razor thin, in my opinion, the last couple of weeks. It's so difficult to nail those calls correctly week in and week out. Shelly, you've been so gracious with your time today. I certainly want to thank you again. Before I let you go, last question I do want to ask you. We are in week nine, essentially, going into week nine. You look at players that were drafted early, players that have been underperforming, players that you are ready to give up on or have already given up on. Who's an early round player that you're ready to cut? And conversely, a guy that you ended up targeting, not necessarily that you won on the waiver wire this week, but a guy that you targeted to try to pick up in a lot of your leagues this week.
Well, I think I'm ready to give up on a couple people. One running back would be Ty Montgomery, and wide receiver would be Willie Snead.
Yeah, Snead. I mean, I don't see a path to him being successful the rest of the year with Ginn playing so well, and he had the hamstring issue, and then he was hardly out there the last week. I'm totally with you on Snead. I don't see a way for it to happen for him this year.
No, it just doesn't seem like he's getting involved at all.
And a sleeper that you targeted on your waiver wire, maybe a potential league winner that was out there. And this podcast obviously coming out Thursday morning, so the FFPC waiver wire will have run at this point. So you don't have to feel like you're hiding any secrets from us. But anybody that you are excited about acquiring this week, Shelley?
Well, this might be just a little under the radar, but I guess I'm kind of looking at Dontrell Inman, even though Chicago's offense just seems to be, at least their passing offense seems to be horrific, but potentially if he becomes their wide receiver one and they can get on track, I guess if I have someone sitting on my bench, I might as well have someone like that.
The excitement of the unknown, Inman, who could be the number one receiver for Chicago the rest of the season, a guy they gave up a draft pick for. Somebody's got to catch a ball for Mitch Trubisky, and he can't just throw it seven times every game.
He might have to throw 10.
Yeah, exactly. And Inman will probably get six of those targets at least. So I'm with you. You know, you could spend you can use there's a lot worse ways to spend your 20th spot on your on your roster than Inman, so I'm with you on that. Listen, it has been a pleasure, Shelley, having you on the High Stakes Lowdown this week. I certainly appreciate the insight that you brought to the table. I wish you the best of luck the rest of the way, not only in the main event, but in all your leagues, and hopefully 2017 is an even bigger year for you than last year was. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And follow us on Twitter @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.